I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now! Japan held a memorial ceremony today in Hiroshima. 80 years ago today, the United States dropped the first atomic bomb in history on the city. 3 days later, the U.S. dropped another atomic bomb on Nagasaki. Hundreds of thousands of civilians were killed, many instantly, many more slowly from severe burns and what would come to be understood as radiation sickness. We'll speak to journalist Greg Mitchell, who's reported extensively on the U.S. atomic bombings. His new PBS film and book are titled The Atomic Bowl, Football at Ground Zero, and Nuclear Peril Today.
But it was the sight of the game that would prove disturbing. On a makeshift gridiron near Ground Zero in Nagasaki, where tens of thousands had been killed by the atomic bomb less than 5 months earlier.
But first, we look at President Trump's firing of the head of the Bureau of Labor Statistics hours after the agency released a weaker-than-expected jobs report. Trump claimed without any evidence that the numbers were rigged in order to make him look bad. We'll speak to former Labor Secretary Robert Reich.
Trump's firing the head of the Bureau of Labor Statistics is not just shooting the messenger with regard to data he doesn't like. It's actually undermining the credibility of the most important source of information about the American economy for the government, for the United States, for the world. This is beyond irresponsible.
We'll speak with Robert Reich about the firing and also about his new book, Coming Up Short, A Memoir of My America. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Israel's expanded military offensive in the Gaza Strip has claimed at least 135 lives over the past 24 hours. Among the dead are 87 starving Palestinians killed while seeking aid. Survivors of one of the attacks were taken to Nasser Hospital in Khan Yunis.
The guys who were there were waiting for the aid. They told people to go there. They hit young men and women there. They threw bombs on them, live bullets, and most of the injuries here are due to bombs. I came with my friend who is injured, and this man was also injured. We moved him with us here. They should deliver the aid in a proper way to reach us. For example, this torment we saw the death in all forms.
In central Gaza, 25 people were crushed to death when a humanitarian aid truck overturned onto a crowd hoping to receive a meal. Gaza officials say Israeli forces have forced drivers to take unsafe routes on delivery runs. Meanwhile, only 85 aid trucks reportedly crossed into Gaza Tuesday, once again falling far short of the 600 trucks daily aid organizations say are needed to supply Gaza's basic needs. Gaza's health ministry reports another 5 people died due to famine and malnutrition over the past day, bringing the starvation-related death toll to 193. Texas Republican Governor Greg Abbott Tuesday asked the Texas Supreme Court to remove Democratic Caucus Chair Gene Wu from office after Wu and more than 50 Democratic legislators fled Texas to block Republicans from redrawing its congressional district map. This is Democratic Caucus Chair Wu.
This isn't my seat. This seat belongs to the people of the state of Texas. Until the people of the state of Texas tell me to go away, I will stay here and fight with everything that I have. This is not about me. This is not about Democrats. This is not about political power. This is about protecting what we believe and love about America.
This comes as Texas Republican Senator John Cornyn sent a letter to FBI Director Kash Patel to track down and arrest the Democratic state legislators who have fled the state to prevent a quorum for a vote on the new redistricting map. President Trump was asked about the FBI intervening and said they, quote, may have to, unquote. Meanwhile, California legislators are pushing through their own redistricting efforts. They're expected to vote on a new congressional map in the coming days, after which California Governor Gavin Newsom plans to put the proposal to a vote November 4th. Rwanda has reached an agreement with the Trump administration to take in immigrants deported from the United States. Rwanda is the third African nation to agree to a similar deal, saying it'll receive up to 250 deportees from the U.S., according to Reuters. The U.S. has already deported over a dozen immigrants to South Sudan and Eswatini, formerly known as Swaziland. Advocates have repeatedly warned of human rights and due process violations as Trump intensifies his mass deportation campaign. The immigrants are not from these countries they are being sent to. In Florida, a Cuban immigrant has been on hunger strike for over 14 days to protest his detention and inhumane conditions at ICE jails. Pedro Lorenzo Concepcion was first jailed at the new detention camp dubbed Alligator Alcatraz and later transferred to another ICE jail in retaliation for his peaceful action. The 44-year-old man was first detained in early July after appearing at a routine ICE appointment. He spoke to the newspaper, the Spanish newspaper, El País.
Since I felt like my life no longer belonged to me, it's now up to them to decide whether I live or die, because I'm not doing anything by going out onto the streets and continuing to live in this uncertainty, wondering if they'll come and lock me up for days. They're not considering the consequences of taking away a person's freedom.
As detained people speak out against abusive conditions in federal immigration custody, a months-long investigation has compiled reports of hundreds of human rights violations at immigration jails nationwide, including physical and sexual abuse, as well as violence against detained children and pregnant people. The probe was led by the office of Georgia Democratic Senator John Ossoff. Here in New York, new data show ICE has arrested over 2,300 people federal immigration courthouses and offices since January, a nearly 200% increase from the months before Trump returned to office. That's according to the New York Times, which detailed how immigrants are summoned to court hearings or appointments with federal agents only to be ambushed and taken into custody. Advocates have denounced the secrecy surrounding the arrests. And today, they've launched a protest camp in a public park in downtown Manhattan next to ICE's office and immigration courthouses at 26 Federal Plaza to demand an end to the crackdown. Democracy Now! Was there early this morning.
My name is Ella Weber. We are here at Liberty City setting up for a space for collective mutual aid and community resistance against ICE's abduction program inside the courts and as they continue to wreak havoc across New York City. We are here located in Foley Square. We'll be here sunrise to sunset offering mutual aid, art, and various resources for immigrant communities that are going inside the courts and looking for resources and support, and also for community members across New York who are interested in getting involved and plugging in and being part of anti-ICE resistance in New York City.
The Trump administration's launched a pilot program to require some visa applicants to pay bonds of up to $15,000. First to be affected are tourists and business travelers from Zambia and Malawi, who will forfeit the payments if they overstay their visas after a maximum of 6 months. The Trump administration says it may amend the program to include other countries. Health and Human Services Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. said Tuesday he's canceling contracts and funding for 22 vaccines developed using mRNA technology, including the COVID-19 shots that save millions of lives after their rapid development in 2020. The funding cuts could also impact research into using mRNA to treat other diseases, including cancer. This comes just a week after Senate Democrats launched an investigation into RFK Jr.'s firing of a CDC vaccine advisory panel, replacing them with unqualified appointees, many with anti-vaccine views. A federal judge has barred the Trump administration from diverting $4.5 billion in disaster relief funds from a landmark program designed to help states protect communities against natural disasters. On Tuesday, U.S. District Judge Richard Stearns ordered a preliminary injunction preventing the Trump administration from spending the congressionally appropriated funds meant for the Building Resilient Infrastructure and Communities program, which Trump-appointed FEMA officials dismissed as wasteful, ineffective, and politicized. Meanwhile, the Environmental Protection Agency is set to terminate $7 billion in federal grants for low and moderate income families seeking to install solar panels on their homes. In response, Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders wrote, quote, "I introduced the Solar for All program to slash electric bills for working families by up to 80%, putting money back in the pockets of ordinary Americans, not fossil fuel billionaires. Now Donald Trump wants to illegally kill this program to protect the obscene profits of his friends in the oil and gas industry. That is outrageous," Senator Sanders wrote. Top Trump officials will gather today at Vice President J.D. Vance's house to discuss whether to publish a recording and transcript of Deputy Attorney General Todd Blanche's recent conversation with Jeffrey Epstein's co-conspirator and convicted sex trafficker and abuser Ghislaine Maxwell. A lawyer for Annie Farmer, an Epstein survivor, sent a letter to judges here in New York saying Farmer supports the release of grand jury transcripts and that, quote, "Transparency is critical to justice, and the public has a legitimate interest in understanding the full scope of Epstein's and Maxwell's crimes, particularly where those actions cause lasting harm to others," unquote. Meanwhile, Ghislaine Maxwell is asking a federal judge in Manhattan to deny the government's request to unseal grand jury transcripts, and she's also appealed to the Supreme Court to overturn her sex trafficking conviction. This comes as the House Oversight Committee has subpoenaed the Justice Department for the Epstein files and has requested depositions from 10 former top officials, including Bill and Hillary Clinton and former FBI Director James Comey. And the Daily Beast is reporting Jeffrey Epstein was a member of Donald Trump's Mar-a-Lago Club more than a year after he was indicted for sex crimes. According to documents, Epstein was still a member of Trump's luxury club 7 years after he poached Virginia Giuffre from Trump's spa, which cast doubt on Trump's version of events, claiming he cut ties with Epstein after he, quote, stole female workers from Mar-a-Lago. Giuffre was underage working at Trump's spa. Tennessee has put to death a 68-year-old prisoner who suffered from dementia, brain damage, and kidney and heart failure. Witnesses to Tuesday's execution say Byron Black complained he was, quote, "hurting so bad" after prison officials strapped him to a gurney and began injecting him with a lethal dose of pentobarbital. The execution proceeded despite Black's protests that an implanted device that regulated his heartbeat could deliver painful shocks to revive him during the execution. The Trump administration says it'll restore a statue of a Confederate general near the U.S. Capitol that was toppled by Black Lives Matter protesters in 2020. The bronze statue of Albert Pike was first erected in 1901. In a statement, Washington, D.C.'s non-voting congressional delegate, Eleanor Holmes Norton, wrote, quote, "The decision to honor Albert Pike by reinstalling the Pike statue is as odd and indefensible as it is morally objectionable. Pike served dishonorably, he took up arms against the United States, misappropriated funds, and was ultimately captured and imprisoned by his own troops," she wrote. Separately, Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth announced Monday he'll restore another Confederate memorial at Arlington National Cemetery in Virginia. U.S. Special Envoy Steve Witkoff has arrived in Moscow for talks with Russian President Vladimir Putin at the Kremlin. His visit comes ahead of President Trump's August 8th deadline for Russia to agree to a ceasefire with Ukraine or face additional sanctions. The White House says it's considering imposing new tariffs on countries that purchase Russian oil, including China, Brazil, and India. On Tuesday, Lithuania's foreign minister warned of a, quote, alarming spillover of Russia's aggression into NATO territory after a Russian drone packed with explosives violated Lithuanian airspace. Meanwhile, Russian officials warned Monday of the growing risk of nuclear war after Trump said he'd ordered two nuclear submarines to be redeployed to, quote, the appropriate regions, unquote. A Kremlin spokesperson said, quote, we believe everyone should be very, very careful with nuclear rhetoric, unquote. NASA is planning to put a nuclear reactor on the moon by 2030. Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy, the former reality TV star who's currently also the acting director of NASA, issued the directive to designate a leader for the program and get input from private industry in 60 days. A senior NASA official told Politico, quote, this is about winning the space race. And Japan is marking 80 years since the United States dropped the first nuclear weapon ever used in war on the city of Hiroshima. Bells rang out at a sunrise ceremony at Hiroshima's Peace Park, honoring the 140,000 people killed by the U.S. atomic bombing August 6, 1945. 3 days later, at least 70,000 people died when the U.S. dropped a second atomic bomb on Nagasaki. We'll have more on this 80th anniversary of the U.S. nuclear attacks later in the broadcast. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. When we come back, former Labor Secretary Robert Reich on President Trump's firing of the head of the Bureau of Labor Statistics hours after the agency released a weaker-than-expected jobs report. We'll also speak to him about his new memoir, Coming Up Short, A Memoir of My America. Stay with us.
Ours is just another skin, simply slips away. You can rise above it, it will shed easily. It all will come out fine. I've learned it line by line. One coming wire, one silver thread. All that you desire rolls on ahead. Like a ship in a bottle, held up to the sun. Sails ain't going nowhere. You can count everyone.
Grateful by Patti Smith in our Democracy Now! Studio. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman in New York, joined by Democracy Now!'s Juan Gonzalez in Chicago. Hi, Juan.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to all of our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
In my opinion, today's jobs numbers were rigged in order to make the Republicans and me look bad. Those were the words of President Trump Friday as he fired the head of the Bureau of Labor Statistics hours after the agency released a weaker-than-expected jobs report. The BLS report showed just 73,000 jobs were added in July and that far fewer jobs had been created in May and June than previously estimated. Trump's move has been widely criticized, including by William Beach, who was picked by Trump to head the BLS during Trump's first term. Beach co-signed a statement saying Trump's move, quote, undermines the credibility of federal economic statistics that are a cornerstone of intelligent economic decision-making by businesses, families, and policymakers, unquote. Many historians have compared Trump's actions to those of President Richard Nixon in 1971, who pushed to remove Jewish staffers from leadership roles at the Bureau of Labor Statistics, claiming they were part of what he called a, quote, Jewish cabal working against him. To talk about this and more, we're joined by Robert Reich. He was U.S. Labor Secretary from 1993 to 1997 under President Clinton. He's author of the new book out this week titled Coming Up Short, A Memoir of My America. Robert Reich is also the subject of The Last Class, a new documentary about his time teaching at the University of California, Berkeley. He just retired. His new piece for The Guardian is titled I Was the U.S. Labor Secretary. Trump's latest firing undermines a key agency. Welcome back to Democracy Now! It's great to have you on the East Coast, Robert.
Good to be here. Thank you, Amy.
So this is massive, what took place on Friday. If you can start off by talking about exactly what happened, why the Bureau of Labor Statistics matters, and what this means for the future.
Well, it's interesting. Like so much that has happened under Donald Trump, even in the first 6 months of his second administration, you know, he's doing things that nobody had ever believed or thought possible. And he's also revealing the most important aspects of government in doing so. I mean, the Bureau of Labor Statistics, for example, nobody really knows about or most people don't think about, but it is the heart, it is the crown jewel of the government's efforts to explain what's happened to the United States economy. Every month, it does surveys about jobs and wages and other very, very important economic issues. And it's not only the government that depends on the Bureau of Labor Statistics, it's also the entire economy. Every business person, every small business person, every investor, everybody in the economy watches that report for signals as to the direction the economy is going in, including, not incidentally, the Federal Reserve Board. So you have Donald Trump saying that he doesn't like the numbers that just came up. And so he shoots the messenger, says, I don't trust that person. Well, what's going to happen now? He puts a new person in there. Does that new person have the trust and confidence of everyone in the economy? It's not just the United States economy. Let's face it, it's also the global economy. Is that new person going to have the trust and confidence we need in that bureau to actually undertake all the economic decisions that have to be done based upon the Bureau of Labor Statistics, the data? You can't possibly. This is another example of Trump basically riding roughshod over our democratic institutions and truth. Amy, this is also about truth. He doesn't like truth. He doesn't like facts. He doesn't like science. He doesn't like broadcasters that broadcast the truth. You know, he cracks down on CBS and NBC and public broadcasting. And wherever there is anything that he doesn't like, he slams it and tries to end it.
Robert Reich, however, I have questions about not so much the projection for the past month, but this enormous reduction of the estimates in the previous months. In May, I think it went from 144,000, it was revised downward to 19,000. And in June, from 147,000 to 14,000. This is a 10, by a magnitude of 10, the Bureau was off in the previous months. So if it's a gold standard of data on labor, why, without any explanation of how there was such enormous errors in the past month. Well, is this more political, or is it just a question of they don't have enough staff to actually do the job they're supposed to do?
One, it's not political. Again, when I was Labor Secretary, the Bureau of Labor Statistics did revise downward and occasionally revised upward its monthly decisions about how many jobs. And those revisions are based upon additional information coming into the Bureau. Now, the Bureau's initial estimates on how many jobs are created in a given month is always a compromise. That is, the Bureau is always trying to get information out as fast as possible. But like any statistical agency, like any competent government agency, like anybody who is gathering data, if you get late data that contradicts or changes your initial estimate, you've got to get that late data out. This is nothing new. The Bureau of Labor Statistics has been revising former months for years and years and years. These particular estimates that were revised downward are large, to be sure, but the size of them doesn't make them less credible. And that's very, very important, because we'll probably see next month, I don't know, but my expectation would be that job growth is slowing quite dramatically. Donald Trump doesn't want that to be known. He doesn't. He wants people to think that his tariffs and his economic policies are creating a lot of jobs. Well, the fact is, they don't seem to be. He doesn't like that, but the American public deserves to know.
I wanted to ask you about another agency that Trump has been at war with, the Federal Reserve. He's called Jerome Powell, who he initially named to the Federal Reserve, as a total and complete moron, a numbskull, a disaster. And his efforts to force Powell and the Federal Reserve to lower interest rates. What's your take on how that has developed?
Well, that's also dangerous in a similar way. That is, if Donald Trump succeeds in cowing the Federal Reserve Board, in putting a new Fed chair in, or getting Chairman Powell to change his mind or to reduce interest rates much quicker than he otherwise would, that affects the market's confidence in what the Fed does. I mean, the next time the Fed reduces interest rates, people are going to say to themselves, if they are business people, if they're investors, if they're anybody in the economy, they will say, well, is that because of Donald Trump? Or is that because the Fed really genuinely believes that there's not so much of a question or challenge or danger of inflation? And as Donald Trump continues to undermine the public's confidence in these numbers and these decisions, whether we're talking about the Bureau of Labor Statistics or the Fed, then the economy is kind of flying blind. More people are just in the complete ignorance about what is actually happening. Trump may like that. If everybody's in ignorance, you know, ignorance is the handmaiden of totalitarianism. Ignorance is the handmaiden of dictatorship. But if everybody's in ignorance, the economy really does suffer.
New York Times columnist Thomas Friedman wrote in his new column, "Of all the terrible things Donald Trump has said and done as president, the most dangerous one just happened on Friday." Then former Treasury Secretary Larry Summers said, "This is the stuff of democracies giving way to authoritarianism. Your whole life as your labor historian is also about democracy." And I'm wondering if you can talk now, as we talk about firings, not only the threatened one at the Federal Reserve and the BLS, CDC, EPA, the gutting of regulations, et cetera, about the baby boomers. And this goes to your book, Coming Up Short, A Memoir of My America. You were born in 1946, and we'll look at the trajectory of what's changed in this country. 1946. Who is your birth cohort? Who else was born in 1946?
Bill Clinton, George W. Bush, Donald Trump, Dolly Parton, Cher. I mean, there are a lot of people born in 1946. But I think the point, and certainly in the book, is that 1946 is the baby boom. That's when the war was over. My father came home, and who was there but my mother? And that was replicated all over America. And that's where the baby boom came from. And the boomers inherited from what has been known as, had come to be known as, the greatest generation, my parents' generation, because they went through the Depression and they wore and they sacrificed. to make America really a better place. They fought the Axis powers. They fought the Nazis. They created an America that had the largest middle class that the world had ever seen. Now, what did we, the baby boomers, do with that? I think, quite honestly, we did a lot of good things. I don't want to tar with too broad a brush. But the fact of the matter is that by the late 1970s,